And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. So excited to welcome Gary Danielson back to the show. He called it. He said that Georgia would be ready and prepared, and Kirby Smart's team pulled off the victory. We talk about Auburn, Georgia. We look ahead to Tennessee and Missouri, the SEC on CBS game of the week, the SEC East title race. All of it gets our attention here on the show. So make sure that you're subscribed so you can get the episodes first, and enjoy Gary Danielson. And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. Gary Danielson joins us for his weekly chat. Gary, long-time listeners of this podcast have enjoyed and given great feedback on our chats, and long-time listeners of this podcast probably were saying that you called it when Georgia showed up against Auburn. You said on this very podcast last week, you know, there were 10 other coaches in the SEC that Gus Malzahn would probably rather play in this spot because of the familiarity, among other things. What did you see as Auburn and Georgia played out on the field that affirmed some of what you were expecting? But then also, was there anything that surprised you from the matchup from either side?
Sure. Well, let's kind of round about this a little bit. First of all, you know, congratulations to you. Just the reach of what we're doing. I mean, everywhere I went. Even the Auburn coaches and, you know, all the Auburn faithful had, you know, read or heard what was said here, and it was a big talking point all week, and you should be happy about that. You guys are doing a great job, and when something gets said and people react to it, that's what we're at. You know, you just don't want to make stuff up. You got to believe what you say. That's the most important thing.
Absolutely.
You're not always right, but you got to believe it.
Come strong. Come very strong.
And so here's what I thought. You know, a lot of what Auburn bases their program on is making defenses uncomfortable. Their tempo is a factor in their belief of their whole program. And I have not been a tempo guy. I believe that once you understand what tempo teams are trying to do to you, there's a way to combat it. You know, when it was first brought in, it was effective. And it sometimes occasionally still can be effective if you have the right matchups and a team starts to panic or you get them chasing their tail the way Arkansas was. But the opposite can be true, too, that if your tempo isn't working, your offense and your players start to question and the simplicity of your package starts to become a problem because they're not good at picking up blitzes and if some of their stuff doesn't work, they're really shorthanded. Going into this game, I knew Kirby would have his team ready mentally, and he would have a plan for their tempo, and he executed it beautifully. One of the things you can do as a defensive team is when the other team substitutes, you can substitute, and you don't have to be in a hurry. The officials allow you to jog onto the field. You don't have to sprint onto the field, and they allow the defensive players to comfortably exit the field. So if you do it right, you can wait for the substitutes to come on, then you can have the linemen go off. And that's exactly how Kirby combated it. When Auburn was forced to substitute, he would wait as long as he could. Then he would send his slowest defensive tackles on the field and substitute for his slowest defensive tackle on the field. And it bought his team time, and it was a great game plan. So all that being said, it helped that they didn't have Petway, and it also helped that Sean White wasn't 100%, but, you know, I really felt going into the, knowing that they were struggling with players, knowing that this was an important game, and knowing that Georgia was comfortable, I figured they had a chance. Did I think they'd beat them? Not really, but I knew they'd have a chance, and it turned out to be that way.
And what a game for Kirby Smart to be able to hang his hat on and build a program moving forward. I think that for fans and for outsiders, heck, maybe even for recruits, it feels to me like 4-4 is a big difference from 3-5, particularly with this signature win.
Yes, and I also think, you know, he's not married. He doesn't believe that recruits are going to come in and have to sit and wait. So he's going to be able to now say, listen, I can coach. You know, I gave him on Atlanta radio station a grade of an incomplete. They asked me to grade Kirby's first year, and I said incomplete. First of all, season's not over.
Right.
Secondly, he has a mismatch of personnel, coaches, parts that don't quite fit. He lost a lot of talent on defense. So it's still incomplete. But I don't think it's incomplete any longer. Now he's served notice to every recruit out there that he can build the same type of dynamic defense and offense with the way Jacob Eason managed the football game. And it's going to be a destination place, and he can go out and sell recruits that I'm going to do the same thing here that Nick has done at Alabama. Can he do it? Probably not. But I think he's going to have something to sell, and he goes from an incomplete to a solid B+ for his season, his initial season at Georgia.
Absolutely. Especially at a place like Georgia. I mean, am I wrong? But it feels like perception can be everything at a place like that.
There were a lot of people saying that this win could save Georgia's season. I did not think that Georgia has higher standards than that, but it sure could make, as I said, the medicine go down better this first year. A loss there would have been people questioning and saying, did we get the right guy? He has no experience. Will he be another, have the same problems that Will Muschamp had? So I think he put a lot of that stuff to rest. And like I say, it was the perfect game for his team to play against.
Before we get to Tennessee-Missouri, which is the SEC on CBS Game of the Week for this coming week, I wanted to get your thoughts on Jacob Eason, but then also we saw Shea Patterson be able to have a successful win in his debut for Ole Miss.
Right.
Nick Fitzgerald is becoming a real game changer for Mississippi State. What do you make of this next young crop of quarterbacks that has come in and later in the season, because of either attrition or other reasons, really been able to step up and start to show some of that, some of those high recruiting rankings being able to make it pay off against SEC defenses? I'm very impressed. Wanted to hear what you thought as
right. Well, and the fact that, you know, four true freshmen are now starting in the SEC.
Oh, and Jalen Hurts. Yes, I guess we should put Jalen Hurts, too.
You know, and Bentley at South Carolina is doing a great job. And, Florida has Felipe ready to go. And, it has to get better. It can't be worse. We will have to say that. This was a tough year for the SEC at quarterback play. But I think it's also mirroring the NFL. You know, a lot of the young quarterbacks in the NFL are having success. A lot of these quarterbacks now are getting more and more private tutoring, going to more and more camps, and they seem to be ready. The problem in the SEC, though, is you really have to play at a high level every week. And taking the punishment, I really think it's a big gamble. And we see it again. You know, Chad Kelly, Trevor Knight goes down. When you're risking your quarterback to be a key component of your running offense in this league, it's like pretty close to running against NFL speed and talent, and you take a lot of hits, and that's the downside. Shea Patterson comes into a game. He's got fresh legs, fresh arm. He's playing against guys that have played, you know, 6, 8, 10 games already in the year, whatever it is, and he's coming in and on fire. The question is, like Bo Wallace, like Chad Kelly, as Trevor Knight, when you play all those games in a row, it's a much more difficult to look like he did in that game. But as you say, I'm not so sure I would have blown the red shirt. I hate the red shirt in college football. For 10 years, Jeff, I've been saying they should have a red shirt. First of all, I said they should just have 5 years. If a guy wants to turn pro after 3, why can't a guy stay and play if he wants to play for 5? You're not going to get the elite athletes playing for 5 anyway. And the coach still has to manage his squad, because for every fifth-year guy, he still can only keep 85.
Right, you only have a certain set number of scholarships.
So what if he decides to keep a guy for a fifth year, he has to take one less freshman. So they're only going to take the ones they want, okay? And the other part that I'd be in favor of is if you play less than 20% of your team's offense or defensive snaps, don't count special teams at all, you should be able to count it as a redshirt. Because why should Shea Patterson have to pay a penalty because there's no one else to play this year but Shea Patterson? And it puts him in a tough position. He's mapped out his career of what he wanted to do. He wanted to get bigger and stronger and set out a year and get ready for 2017. But how could he look his teammates in the eye and say, I don't want to play for you guys. I'm saving myself to 2017. So I'm for redshirt counting for the number of plays. If you play over 20% of the total offensive plays, who cares? Count it as a year. But if you come in and save a team, it shouldn't count you as a whole year.
Do you think that Shea Patterson is the type of talent at quarterback where he's going to be in the mix to leave after 3 years?
Yes. No, I'm not so sure about that. But I do think he's a difference maker in college football. I did talk to Hugh Freeze, and he said he's the best high school quarterback he's ever seen or recruited. And I did watch him at practice. He's a tremendous athlete, and he's got, you know, a tremendous understanding of not just the spread attack that they're running, but all of college, all of football. He does anticipate well. He's a real bright quarterback. The problem, again, I have for him is running that offense he's going to run at Ole Miss. Hugh Freeze has to be careful to understand that he needs to keep that guy healthy, not just for Shea Patterson's good, but for his team's good. How many hits should they be taking? And it's accumulated hits in the SEC that really stands up. Nick Fitzgerald, by the way, he's one of those guys that will, you know, I think, I'm pretty sure he's a redshirt sophomore this year. He will stay all 5 years, and he will get better and better. Dan Mullen, as good as anybody doing it. But, you know, playing Alabama's in a different class. They're the only team that controls their own destiny and can lose a game. There are a few teams that control their own destiny, but they're the only team that can lose a game and still get in the playoffs, Alabama.
Alabama's got the SEC West locked up, just like I've got a bunch of good meals for this week locked up. And it's all thanks to Blue Apron, because Blue Apron's got it coming in November. We've got pan-seared chicken with roasted fall vegetables with that butter caper sauce, spicy lotus root, and purple carrot stir fry. Got some sweet potato noodles, and then lemongrass roasted pork with Romanesco cauliflower and coconut rice. It is fresher ingredients, and it is something that you can pull together. Everything's pre-portioned ingredients. It is an incredible experience, not only to make, but also to eat, and it is less than $10 a meal for Blue Apron to deliver these and more seasonal recipes along with those pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. You can actually check out this week's menu, and you can get your first three meals free. That's right. Free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SEC. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't you wait. That's blueapron.com/SEC. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. The SEC West already cemented. The SEC East, not so much. And that SEC East title race, it is the focus. It is the storyline of this Saturday in the SEC, a Saturday that sees a lot of the SEC, a lot of the league play a team either from the FCS or the Group of Five. But we do have a couple of huge conference matchups for that SEC East title race. Tennessee will be playing host to Missouri, and the Tigers coming off their first SEC victory of the season, 26-17 against Vanderbilt. This is a Missouri team that has struggled mightily at times. Right. Is trying to figure out. I'll go ahead and turn over to you, but I see a Missouri team that is moving the ball with pace, but not always with efficiency. A talented quarterback in Drew Locke, and a Missouri defense that, because of injuries and some personnel issues, doesn't seem to have the teeth that I expected, given Barry Odom's experience coaching defense at Missouri. What do you make of this Tigers team so far?
Well, Gary Pinkel remade this program by going to the spread and then incorporating the up-tempo pace to it. But this year, it's a double-edged sword for this team. They're weak on defense. They used to be a team that caused a lot of tackle for losses, turnovers, sacks. But they're depleted through injury, through graduation, and just losing on a lot of recruits, you know. And just right now, they're in a tough position. They're not ready to play at the pace they're playing. It makes it very difficult for their defense, and for anybody that would that needed to slow down and make it a 60-play game, it should be Missouri. But their whole program is built around how they play, and when they don't have the talent, it looks really bad. So now they go into Tennessee and try to see if they can capture what they had last week. It's a little tough. I mean, I've played on teams that it was a hopeless feeling, that you know that because of injuries and because of circumstances with a new coach, the fit wasn't just quite right, and you can't really wait to get to the next season. Mm. I mean, you're just saying, let me count down the games. I need two more games. Let me wash this one away. Let's get in the weight room and let's start working towards 2017. But you know, you got teammates, and you owe it to your teammates to go out there and play the best you can. You owe it to the conference to go out there and try to knock off Tennessee and make it possible for Florida to get in there. That's part of being a competitor. They show signs they're not a good tackling team. They show signs sometimes you're right when Locke gets it going, but this is a team that misses the elite talent that I saw in 2014, where they couldn't match up with the great teams in the league, you know, Auburn 1 year and Alabama the other, but they could play with anybody else. This team has trouble matching up with nearly everyone.
There were game-breaking wide receivers on those teams.
Yes.
6'5", 6'6", matchup nightmare type guys. And while you've got, I think, you've got options here, mostly through the transfer route, it's certainly, like you said, not from the recruiting trail as it had been built before. Tennessee, coming into this game, still very much in the SEC East title race. They have two games left on their SEC schedule. Florida, currently in the lead, has one. Florida will be playing at LSU. More on that game in just a second. Do you think that Tennessee has found some life here?
I do.
We mentioned it a little bit last week, but just the uncertain impact, but definite impact of Jalen, because Butch Jones has mentioned it, of Jalen Hurd's exit. Alvin Kamara has returned. Cameron Sutton back. This is a group that I think, especially playing at home, I'm excited to see if they show up with the kind of fire of a team that is starting to stare at a rematch with Alabama.
Well, let me give the positive first, because you're right. I think there must have been an underlying tension with Jalen Hurd in that locker room. He was a friend with a lot of guys. He put a lot of time into that locker room and team, and something had to be going on behind the scenes that, you know, there probably was some people that were sympathizing with Jalen and some that were saying, come on, you got to put the team first. But I believe, and I have no proof on this, that the locker room wasn't just right. And I do think that now that they've got out of the pressure of being the leader and the hunted, which I always thought and told you all year that Tennessee wasn't used to being the hunted. They were used to being the hunter. And it was going to be different for them this year, playing under the pressure of expectations. And they, you know, they just really couldn't handle it. One of the reasons was they had injury. And the other is they just kept trying to figure out who they were on offense. And you know, they didn't know exactly if they were a ball control running team or should they be more of a passing team. And I think there was never a connecting exactly what they were. Now I think they're freewheeling. They've got nothing to lose. They're in a position to overtake. They probably feel in their own mind that LSU is going to beat Florida and they control their own destiny and they've been playing loose. But here is the caution. Here's the other side of it. This is a game now that they're expected to win. This is a game now that they know they have a chance to get into Atlanta. Now the expectations jump back on their back and they've been playing free and loose so far. Can they take that into this game? Because you got to know that Missouri's going to look for, give us a couple of things to believe in. Give us a couple of turnovers. And we've seen Tennessee turn the ball over at will.
Yep.
When they don't play a good game. So I think that's the type of game we could have and see if Missouri can come in here. And again, not save their season. They're working on 2017. Tennessee's still working on 2016 season.
The Florida-LSU game in Baton Rouge, goodness gracious, thank goodness it got rescheduled because of the headache right. That we would have right now. I don't think I'd be able to take it. Florida 20-7 winners. Now, Austin Appleby in the first half of this game has a couple of touchdown passes, a couple of really pretty touchdown passes, and now he goes up against Danny Etling. First, Gary, former Purdue quarterback, what do you think about this Purdue and Purdue quarterback battle? And also, with two quarterbacks who have been tasked with navigating an offense that is constantly changing. Florida, a week ago, a lot of zone reads, bubble screens, a sort of scheming South Carolina a little bit. Danny Etling's been charged with taking on multiple offenses this season. Do you think that the quarterback battle will play a big role in deciding this all-important Florida-LSU game?
If I was going into this game, I wouldn't... go into the game thinking if I was LSU or Florida that I need my quarterback to play great to win.
You don't want to be in that position, that's for sure.
No, I would not want to. I would not want to count on that to say, boy, if we can't win unless Danny Etling or Andy Appleby plays well, because that might not happen. You know, it looks to me like they've really started this. Put Danny Etling into a position of being a manager. Don't make mistakes. Let's run the ball. Give me a few play-action passes, and let's count on our defense. For Appleby, it's we have to manufacture ways to move the ball because our standard offense that I used at Alabama and Colorado State isn't working here at Florida. So we have to do some other things. But if I'm going to count on my quarterback against this LSU defense, I'd be a little nervous about that because you could have a couple turnovers real quick and this game could get out of hand. I think both teams will play it a little close to the vest and think that their defense can win the game, and we'll see. Maybe it's a couple key plays, a deep ball, a punt return, a turnover that decides this football game.
The Florida team so banged up right now, and it's getting worse. Up to 8 starters that could be missing this game. Jared Davis might be shut down for a while, at least. He might come back for the bowl game, but
Anzalone's out this week.
Anzalone's out still. I mean,
Marcus May, who's maybe the best safety in the league. You got the both centers, Dillard and Jordan. It's been a, and that's again why you needed to play these games. Attrition matters. Getting through the whole season matters. Look what's happened to Texas A&M without their quarterback. You have to put together, just like baseball, you have to put together a team that can make it through 162 games to get the opportunity to play in the 7-game series where you can throw your starters 3 times. The same thing here for this SEC championship. And why in this playoffs championships matter so much to me when I'm ranking these teams is attrition matters. Finishing matters, and getting through the conference schedule matters, and that's exactly what's happened to this Florida team.
Do you expect, just as we're waiting for these last 3 weeks to play out, the all-important final data pieces, do you think that the committee will be tested with about 7 or 8 teams that would like to think of themselves as playoff hopefuls still here on November 15th as we're recording this? Do you think that the committee will be tested on their commitment to the conference championship?
Yes, I do. It seems that the conventional wisdom that most all of the talking heads are trying to influence the committee by the experts again saying that they know best and they know who are the best teams, and the lobbying for Louisville and Ohio State is very strong right now. To me, have we gone through this last week, especially last Tuesday till now, the one thing that I'm sure of more than ever is that experts are only good at one thing, talking. They're not right. They're good at talking. They're good at talking on television.
Yep.
Okay? They don't know the outcome of anything, but they're good at telling people what the outcome might be and then afterwards explaining why they were wrong. Okay? I never do that. My weight goes to proving it on the field. I don't know who's better, but I do know that these championships have to matter. I don't know if Clemson's better than Washington, and here's what I also know. Nobody else knows either. Okay, so how do you wait? We've learned this lesson over and over again. Everybody thought Ohio State was going to get killed by Alabama, except for the Ohio State players.
Right.
And this whole thing is really cute and fun to pick these teams, unless you're West Virginia or Washington or Penn State or Wisconsin. And then if you get locked out because somebody else on TV thinks that they know who the better team is, that is completely unfair if you ask me. That's why I weight it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Who controls their own destiny? I only think there's only 4 teams that do. Alabama, obviously, Clemson, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Wisconsin had the crossover playing at Michigan and Ohio State, and if they win the Big Ten championship, they're going to be in. But here's how the committee has a problem. They think Ohio State belongs, and I do too. They probably are one of the best 4 teams. But to get Ohio State in, if Ohio State beats Michigan, they're going to have to be the 2nd team in the Big Ten because Penn State's going to be playing Ohio State, and they're going to have to put in one of those other 2 teams and then put in Ohio State as the fourth team, and that means Washington, Louisville, West Virginia, Colorado, Washington State are all going to be on the outside looking in.
Do you think, and I might be crazy for this one, but there are 5 1-loss teams left. We assume that Alabama will continue its path of all the way. So we got 3 spots left, 5 1-loss teams. 2 of them are going to play each other, Ohio State and Michigan. Am I crazy to think that Oklahoma could get a conference championship boost into the college football playoff?
I don't know how they get by Louisville, to tell you the truth with that. I just don't see it. I think it's really tough. You know, if more chaos, if Clemson loses again, you know, if Wisconsin gets knocked off, Penn State gets knocked off, perhaps. But I think, really, there's a stronger argument for West Virginia than there is for Oklahoma.
Wow.
You know, Oklahoma's made a nice comeback here, and they've got a brand name. Brand names don't matter with me.
I think they matter in the committee room somehow.
I think they do. I think they do, but I don't try to... I really stick to what I know.
Okay.
And not what I I can project. Here I was just on CBS's nice show, We Need to Talk. And you know, my first line is the committee does not need to talk. They
nice.
Need to sit down and wait.
Yeah.
I don't know why they do this. I think that they were the big losers last week again. They again confused everybody about what matters. You know, once it's Texas A&M, and then all of a sudden Washington leapfrogs Ohio State, and then all of the teams they thought were good all lose. So why should I listen to you now? Mm. If you were wrong so much last week, why are you going to be right this week? So eye test doesn't matter. Experts don't matter. Only what's on the field matters. And to me, if we're going to play these games, championships matter. And I'm giving way to the championship, and I guarantee you, if Wisconsin plays Penn State, the winner of that game will be in. But the committee will want to put in Ohio State, and I think everybody else will be on the outside.
Wow, you're right. And let me confirm that the only qualification for getting the expert title is just being able to speak coherent sentences while someone else talks in your ear. If you can do that, I'm pretty sure you're good.
Or just keep talking. Somebody will listen to you.
He's Gary Danielson. He will be live on the call with Vern Lundquist and Allie LaForce. Gary, ton of fun. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, you got it. Thank you.